You're about to watch what we call an extended clip of the Young Turks, and the reality is it's somewhere in the middle. It's a little longer than our YouTube clips, but it's actually shorter than the whole 2-hour show, which you can get if you're a member. You can get it ad-free, and make sure you catch every news story we do that day. You're gonna love it as a full show. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Welcome to the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian with you guys tonight. It's gonna be a great show. Anna, what's up?
All right, lots of stuff is up, and I wanna get right to the stories. We begin with an update on a story that we did yesterday. It's a good update. Yesterday, we spoke about a story regarding a 91-year-old Mexican man who was in Los Angeles to visit his family. He was unfortunately violently attacked by a woman who had a concrete brick. We didn't know why she attacked. There was one witness there who said that the woman kept telling this man, "Go back to your country, you don't belong here." And luckily, the police have made an arrest. They have found the suspect. Her name is LaQuisha Jones. She was arrested Tuesday night in Los Angeles on suspicion of beating Rodolfo Rodriguez last week. She was being held on a charge of assault with a deadly weapon, with bail set at $200,000. The witness who saw everything said that there were a group of men who joined in on the attack, but that the men were told false information by the suspect. The woman had told the men that Rodolfo was trying to take her child away, her little girl. She has a 4-year-old girl, apparently. That was not the case. And I'm happy that there has been an arrest, because they had no leads as of yesterday when we reported on the story.
Yep. Okay, so by the way, LaQuisha Jones, can I ask you guys something? I know this is a weird thing to ask in the middle of a show, but are we having issues with this monitor or the overall feed? No, okay, sounds like it's the monitor. Okay. Back from the interruption. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so LaQuisha Jones is African American. We don't know right now what the race of the 3 or 4 men are.
Right.
And so we'll find out. If you're wondering if someone can be discriminatory against others while being black, the answer is yes.
Right.
And so the witness says that LaQuisha was yelling, "Go back to your country, go back to Mexico." So here we are in the Hunger Games, pitted against one another, and we're not looking up to see who controls power. We're looking down to see who we can literally hit with a brick underneath us.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a 91-year-old man. He's going to turn 92 in September, and he is not a threat at all. We showed you the video of, you know, what he looked like after the attack, and I want to show you again, because this is the consequence of hate. You have a powerless person, an elderly person, being attacked for something that he can't control. He happens to be Mexican. And, you know, the results are horrific. Take a look.
He said that he was just walking to the park, and then the lady was walking with her little girl, and he accidentally tapped the little girl by accident when he was walking, when he was trying to get over them. And she just tossed him to the floor, and she started beating him.
Wow. Yeah, he's got a broken jaw, 2 broken ribs, broken cheekbones, and you could see the rest of the damage there. That's his grandson that he was visiting. He visits them fairly regularly in America, and he's known for taking a walk around the neighborhood once a day. But this one obviously did not go as the others have. And there's so much fear and paranoia in the country now that's definitely a huge part of the story. The other part of the story is this particularly monstrous person who thinks that it's okay to hit a 91-year-old with a brick. It's crazy. I just cannot comprehend it.
Yeah.
It really is. What human beings are willing to do to each other is a frightening thing. And that's unfortunately one of the consequences right there.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to some other news. Donald Trump is in Brussels meeting with NATO allies for the NATO summit, and the summit began with conflict right off the bat, which was expected considering some of the statements that Trump had made prior to traveling to Brussels. Now, there was a heated exchange between Donald Trump and the NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg. Stoltenberg has been very nice and complimentary toward Trump, because it is my suspicion that he understands that's the only way that you could potentially get through to Trump in some way. And so even through this very combative exchange, you can see that Stoltenberg is trying to negotiate with Trump with a cool, calm, you know, head intention. And Trump fights back by arguing that Germany happens to be a puppet for Russia.
So we're gonna
get to the details of that. I'm gonna break it down for you in just a minute. But first, let's take a look at the first part of this exchange.
So if you go back 10 or 20 years, you'll just add it all up. It's massive amounts of money is owed. The United States has paid and stepped up like nobody. This has gone on for decades, by the way. This has gone on for many presidents, but no other president brought it up like I bring it up.
So again, that goes along with what Trump has been saying. The US pays too much, our allies pay too little. To be fair to Trump, as we mentioned yesterday, you know, our allied countries promised to increase their spending on NATO back in 2014 after Russia had annexed Crimea. And they have not followed through on that, specifically Germany. Germany said that they would increase the spending to about 2% of their gross domestic product, and they have not done that. They promised to do about 1.5% by 2024. And the only reason why they promised to increase it is because Trump has pressured them to increase the amount they pay.
Now, to be fair, the European allies, they had actually been increasing all along, even before Trump came in. But I do believe Trump's pressure did help to ratchet that up. And so we try to give credit where credit is due, but there's a line between strength and bullying. So if Trump just stuck with strength and handled this behind the scenes and maybe tweaked them in front of the scenes, et cetera, and got them to increase their percentages, fine. But now, of course, because he can't help himself because that's who he is, he resorts to public humiliation and bullying and embarrassing everyone at the table. And you know, there's a breaking point, and at some point, they're going to break, and they're going to do what is logical, which is, okay, well, then I guess if you're not our ally, we're going to go find other allies, especially economic partners. And there's a very serious consequence to this as well. Another thing he can't help himself with, of course, as always, is no other president was doing it, and now I'm doing it. Shut up already, Jesus Christ. I mean, everything's a stupid brag. What a silly child. And so my guess is that at some point, one of the other foreign leaders is going to snap, and justifiably so. And while Trump is going around doing his bullying act, they're going to stand up in public. Merkel did it a little bit here, but it is a tiny tweak. One of them is going to stand up and say, why don't you shut up already? You always run your mouth and you never know what the hell you're talking about. I don't know if any of them will go that far, although they should. But somebody's going to punch back, and then he's going to get his feelings hurt, and then we're going to have huge issues.
And you can't discount the allies who stood by our side after we were attacked. And that's the whole point, you know, after 9/11, that the biggest terrorism attack in United States history. And it's just interesting to see a US leader, US president, turn his back on these individuals, or these countries, I should say, after, you know, they have supported us, historically have supported us in various situations. Okay, with that said, though, let's now go to Stoltenberg's response to Trump.
I agree that we have to do more. I agree with you that we have to make sure that allies are investing more. The good news is that the allies have started to invest more in defense. After years of cutting defense budgets, they have started to add billions to the defense budgets. And last year was the biggest increase in defense spending across Europe and Canada in a generation.
Why was that last year?
It's also because of your leadership, because your clear message. And
they won't write that.
No, I have said it before. But the thing is that it really has. Your message is having an impact. And we are going to build on that to make sure that we have further increases. The U.S. military presence in Europe helps to protect Europe. It also helps the United States project power to the Middle East, to Africa. And I think also that the clout, the military clout of Europe, the economic clout, the political clout, also is helpful dealing with Russia.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Okay. It's what a pathetic child. And why was that? Why was that? Oh, Mr. President, also because of your pressure.
Yeah. Because of your leadership.
Yeah, but they won't write that. The media won't write that. Hey, child, focus. This is our most important alliance. Can you focus on that for a second other than yourself? No, he can't because he's pathological. He's a narcissist, unlike anyone I have ever seen in public before. So here, how's the right way to do it or wrong way to do it? Right way to do it is, yeah, we've got a lot of strength and leverage in America, and you want to get them to pay up more, you exert pressure and you do it in a strong way, that's fine. What part of that involves having to kiss your ass? Like if you say, hey, I'm going to use American power to deliver for American voters, citizens, etc. Great, I want a president that strong. But if you say, but and also you got to tell everybody, hey, it's me. Then you're pathetic, man. It's sad watching this guy every day looking for, he's so insecure. How can you not see it? He's like the weakest man in life. Hey, somebody give me credit. Please give me credit. It was me, wasn't it? Stober was me, right?
And ironically, he could have used that moment to really prove prove what he thinks of himself, which is that he is strong, that he is a good leader, that he is a good negotiator. Because if you listen to what Stoltenberg said, by the way, in an effort to finally get Trump to cooperate, he was very conciliatory. He was conceding exactly what Trump wanted, right? You want more money to be poured into NATO, into this alliance, and we are going to do that, and it's because of your leadership. But what Trump does is, you're right, Cenk, he appears to be even more of a child by constantly wanting validation and credit. And then on top of that, the way that he's about to respond to Stoltenberg, and you're going to see in the video that I show you, I think it pushes people to not want to negotiate with Trump, to not ever want to concede with Trump. Because essentially, when you do agree with Trump or when you do concede to Trump, he ends up looking at you as if you're weak, and then he doubles down. He attacks even further. So to prove my point, here is the next part of this exchange where he starts talking about Germany's relations with Russia. Take a look.
Well, I have to say, I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia, where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia, and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries, and then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia, where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia, and I think that's very inappropriate. And the former chancellor of Germany is the head of the pipeline company that's supplying the gas. is ultimately Germany will have almost 70% of their country controlled by Russia with natural gas.
Okay, so I have a lot to say about this. I do want to preface it, though, by saying that the pipeline is a bad idea for numerous reasons. However, Trump attacking Germany for having any type of economic tie to Russia is ridiculous, especially when you consider that the United States did a considerable amount of trade in energy with Russia during the Cold War. So I'll give you the facts and you know details on that in just a minute. But, Cenk, I want you to jump in.
All right, so first of all, in another part, he said Germany, as far as I'm concerned, is captive to Russia because it's getting so much of its energy from Russia. That's the Missy Elliott strategy, flip it and reverse it. So he was accused of having fake news help him win the election in 2016, which was absolutely true, positively, no question about it. The fake news was overwhelmingly on the side of Donald Trump and the right wing. And what did he do? He flipped it and reversed it, and he's like, no, I'm not the fake news, you're the fake news. Which, by the way, of course, another childish thing. Oh, yeah, it doesn't stick on me, it goes on you, or whatever the kids say, right? Yeah. About rubber and glue. Okay, so, and in this case, I'm not captive to Russia, you're captive to Russia, got you. All right, Jesus Christ. All right, now, the part that is valid is that former German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder has a very questionable deal with the Russians. Mm-hmm. He, right before he left office and after he was voted out in that interim period, he made a deal for this pipeline with the Russians. Then he goes over and immediately afterwards starts working for the Russians. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's crazy. He now is the head of Rosneft, the largest gas company, gas and oil company in Russia. So now, but the important part is, why does Trump care? You know, so some of the articles rightly point out, oh, you know, this circumvents some of our Eastern European allies like Poland and Ukraine. Let's pause to think about whether Trump would give a damn about that.
He does not. And just to, you know, buttress your point, I mean, he seems to support the Russian annexation of Crimea, and he makes sure to mention that the reason he supports it is because there's a lot of Russian speaking people in Crimea. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So I believe the actual reason that Trump is opposed to that deal is because we had a giant deal with Rosneft, ExxonMobil did. And I've told you about that many, many times, and that was a $500 billion deal, but its revenue could equal up to $9 trillion. It was an enormous deal with the Russians. So apparently, we, and in this case, the right wing and the Republican Party and Donald Trump doesn't mind making a deal with the Russians. Apparently, he didn't think it would make us captive to Russia, as he just accused the Germans of being. It's just that he wanted the deal and not the, and he didn't want the Germans to get it. So that's why he brings it up now.
Right. And also, you know, just to give some credit to our allies and others who believe that this pipeline deal is a really bad idea, you know, it essentially does make Germany a lot more dependent on Russia. So according to reporting, Germany is Russia's biggest export market in Europe for gas, with a dependency that may grow further once this Nord Stream 2 is finished. This is, by the way, the second pipeline. So this will, again, increase the dependency that Russia that Germany has on Russia for oil. Now, moving forward, why are other allies concerned about this? Well, let's take a look at what happened several years ago. Let's go to graphic 5. Amid the fallout over the Russian annexation of Crimea, Russia cut off Ukraine's gas supplies for weeks in what Kiev said was an attempt to blackmail Ukraine. EU pressure on Russia helped to eventually solve the conflict. So that EU pressure is important, and that included Germany, right? But if Germany is very, very dependent on Russia for its energy, for its oil, then it's less likely to be as vocal in supporting countries like Ukraine.
Yes. So I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about what appears to be brazen corruption by the former leader of Germany. But I don't think that Trump's concerns are the same as ours. Can you imagine? He's like, oh my God, what's going to happen to our ally Poland?
No concern.
Couldn't care less, right?
Yeah.
And is he like, wait, this appears to be corruption. I'm really concerned about corruption, especially in a different country. Come on.
He's very worried about that.
Right.
All right, so final part of this was Stoltenberg's response. And in it, just pay close attention about what he says regarding trade, because it is relevant. Take a look.
You know, NATO is an alliance of 29 nations, and there are sometimes differences and different views and also some disagreements. And the gas pipeline from Russia to Germany is one issue where allies disagree. But the strength of NATO is that despite these differences, we have always been able to unite around our core task to protect and defend each other, because we understand that we are stronger together than apart. I think that two world wars and the Cold War taught us that we are stronger together than apart.
But how can you be together when a country is getting its energy from the person you want protection against, or from the group that you want protection against?
Because we understand that when we stand together, also when dealing with Russia, we are stronger. I think what we have seen is that...
No, you're just making Russia richer.
Well,
you're not dealing with Russia, you're making Russia richer.
Well, so I think that even during the Cold War, NATO allies were trading with Russia. Then there have been disagreements about what kind of trade arrangements we should go
I think to. Trade is wonderful. I think energy is a whole different story.
Okay, so I know, it's amazing. What Stoltenberg said there was 100% accurate, though, because European allies, along with the United States, did trade with Russia, with the USSR during the Cold War. And by the way, traded oil.
Okay, look, this is insanity. Nothing he said makes any sense.
Yeah.
So have we traded with Russia or other people that we consider not our allies, not our direct allies before and now? All the time. We have hundreds of billions of dollars in trade with China, with Russia. We do. Not just Germany, not just the European countries, we do. Mm-hmm. In fact, Donald Trump just lifted sanctions on the Chinese company ZTE.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Which we were worried was spying in on us and causing national security problems for us, et cetera, et cetera. So what happened to, you want protection from them, but now you're doing trade with them. Yes, you can do both of those things at the same time. You could be concerned about Putin, you could be concerned about China, and still do some degree of trading. Germany needs that energy. They got to get it from somewhere. We might not be happy with that deal, but of course they need trading partners. The energy in Europe is dwindling as a resource. They have to get it from somewhere else. And that leads to the final irony, which is that Trump wants to do an energy deal with Russia, with Rosneft. Mm-hmm. So I could understand everything, but not energy. Then how come you want to do an energy deal with Russia? What an unbelievable liar.
Right.
And he says, at one point in that exchange, he said, so explain that. And it can't be explained, and you know that. No, it can easily be explained if you weren't a child, if you did any homework, if you cared about your job, and you cared about anything relating to the American people and actually looking out for our interests. It reminds me of Bill O'Reilly with tides go in, tides go out. You can't explain that. Yes, we can. We have scientists that explain it. In this case, this is simple economics. Anyone can explain it if you bother to study it for 1 minute. And finally, the most important part of all of this is constantly questioning the alliance itself. Mm-hmm. For whatever imagined or real reasons, you're not paying enough of your bill, you're doing a trade deal I don't like, etc., etc. So now, what is the heart of an alliance?
don't attack any of these countries, otherwise we are an alliance and we will counterattack or defend ourselves against you. If now our adversaries think they're not really going to defend each other and they have internal dissension, now Trump is calling into question the entire alliance. Estonia is in NATO. Estonia has a lot of native Russian speakers. That's Trump logic. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe I go take Estonia and see if they're actually going to stick together. Well, that's certainly got to be crossing some people's minds. And if you have an alliance where it is not rock solid that you guys are actually going to defend each other, then it's not a real alliance and it encourages your enemies.
Bingo. Yeah, I mean, that's an accurate interpretation. And I think that's the main reason why Secretary Stoltenberg is doing everything he can to remain calm in this interaction. But I don't know how much more patience these world leaders are going to have when, you know, in summit after summit, Trump comes at them in this strange, combative way and accuses them of all sorts of things. And, you know, in that last exchange that we showed you, he specifically said, Germany's making Russia richer. And he thinks of everything in terms of a financial transaction, when in reality, international relations is a lot more complicated and complex than that. All right.
Can I just ask, who did Tornado?
Because I don't know, but it's fantastic.
Yes. Okay, whoever did that in the production meeting, bless your heart. And the graphics, they're both fantastic.
It is really good. Yeah.
Okay, all right, just a random programming note because Anna and I were not in that meeting. Okay, all right, we'll find out and we'll tell you guys who was responsible. We're going to find out who was responsible, okay?
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Go. All right, back on the Young Turks. You will read anything in the YouTube super chat, so I'm going to read you a little bit of a long one here. Michael Norris has an interesting idea. Hi, Cenk and Anna. Possible slogan acronym of the progressive agenda I'm moving forward. It's SNAP! Exclamation point. S is for safety, gun control. N is for net neutrality. A is for affordable health care, Medicare for all system. P is for progressive funding, that's campaign finance reform. And the exclamation point is for immigration and internal DACA and pathway to citizenship, debt-free college and raising minimum wage. Thoughts?
Oh, snap.
I like it. Okay, I think you're only supposed to do two. Anyways. Tommy San George says on YouTube Super Chat, Trump's entire presidency is a crazy version of Cenk's poker model, throwing gambling norms out the window to confuse other conventional players and make strength its own reality. Thank you for remembering my poker model. I talked about that in an old school episode.
I don't think I've heard that episode.
Yeah, you got to check it out. Mm-hmm. TYT.com/join to get all of our shows, home of progressives, including the super fun old school tonight on old school. Me, Michael Schur, John Iderola. Huh, interesting little combination. Actually, I want to talk a little bit more about gambling there too. Speaking of old school, Avocado Juicy, who told us, I think yesterday, that they just signed up for membership. On Twitter says, I decided to watch my first episode of Old School since I really enjoyed my first post game. And I watched the June 28th where Cenk talked about their hair. Ben and Cenk talked about their hair and picking up girls. I laughed and laughed and had to watch it again. Thank you for making my day. Really, if you haven't seen Old School, I think that you would love it.
It's so good.
It's part of membership, of course. And members can watch it live tonight. It comes on at 9:30 Eastern, tyt.com/join to become a member. And last one here, because it's such a good point by Santos Juante, isn't Deutsche Bank a German bank? Just want to put a pin in that as Trump razzes German delegates at a NATO meeting. Go on. Santos, that's a great point. The Germans, I'm going to get very tough on the Germans. Well, you kind of like the Germans when they were loaning you $1 billion when no one else would, right? Now all of a sudden, you're getting tough on the Germans, please. All right, Casper, next.
All right. Donald Trump is attempting to reassure farmers in states that overwhelmingly voted for them, or voted for him, that he is looking out for them. If they're worried, don't worry. Everything's going to end up okay when it comes to trade and tariffs in the end. Now, he reassured his supporters and farmers on Twitter, as he would, and said, I am in Brussels, but always thinking about our farmers. Soybeans fell 50% from 2012 to my election. Actually, they've been falling since your election. Farmers have done poorly for 15 years. Other countries' trade barriers and tariffs have been destroying their businesses. I will open things up better than ever before, but it can't go too quickly. I am fighting for a level playing field for our farmers and will win. Now, this is probably a response to the backlash that he's received after he decided to do more tariffs on Chinese goods in response to China retaliating over his first set of tariffs. So if you can recall, last week he issued about a 10% tariff on $34 billion worth of Chinese goods. China retaliated. And then just yesterday we learned that Trump retaliated against those retaliations to the tune of $200 billion in Chinese goods, tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. Now, with that said, even though Trump is reassuring people everything's going to be okay, Republicans are not happy. And Chuck Grassley can hardly contain himself. So he had a round of interviews on Fox, and let's show you the first interaction he had.
I'm very, very nervous about it, and my constituents are very, very nervous about it. And it doesn't just affect the 5% of the people in Iowa that operate farms, it ripples through the whole economy. I am a free trader. I do want the president to level the playing field with countries that have more barriers to trade than we do, but the uncertainty of it is very bad, and we do know this, that if the president, the negotiator is, brings these negotiations to the brink, and if he doesn't go over the brink, we know that it's going to be better for the United States, but if he does go over the brink, it's going to be catastrophic, and with the price of soybeans and corn falling the way it has, it's already been catastrophic if you want to sell your beans and corns today. If you wait a while, maybe you can do better, or if you sold them 2 months ago, you'd do better, but this has had a very detrimental impact on current markets.
So as soon as I saw Trump's tweet, I was like, oh boy, he must be getting a ton of heat from farmers and Republicans who represent farmers. And then I see the Chuck Grassley video and I'm like, oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So look, if you do trade wars, it really hurts trade. And so you have to find a balancing act to not just give corporations whatever they want and let them write the trade deals, make sure that you're actually trying to fight for the American workers and the American citizens. But at the same time, not start a trade war, which is going to hurt not just other countries, but us as well. So yes, those markets are falling. Yes, the farmers are in a lot of trouble. And yes, the Republican Party will lose Iowa. It's not like that's not possible. Obama won Iowa, okay? And that's why Trump's like, it's going to be okay. It's not going to get fixed right away. Red, never, right? Mm-hmm. And Grassley wonders whether he has a long-term plan. I have the answer to that.
Yeah, it's concerning because Trump might be doing permanent damage when it comes to our relations with trade relations with these countries. Because as we know, other countries that typically don't do these trade deals with one another are now getting together to kind of, you know, cut the U.S. out of the equation. So Mexico and China is a perfect example of that. But with that said, what I loved about that Grassley statement was he clearly said toward the end of that video, you know, if you were a farmer 2 months ago, you would have been better off. I'm paraphrasing, but he said that. And Trump goes on Twitter and is like, you know, it was really bad for the farmers up until my presidency. No, it's gotten worse for these farmers.
Way worse.
Yeah.
I never saw Chuck Grassley is a right-wing Republican. And I never saw him on TV talking about how Obama's screwing over farmers in Iowa because Obama didn't. Mm-hmm. And if he had, believe me, Grassley would have loved to have attacked him for that and go, oh my God, my poor constituents, the farmers in Iowa, I can't believe this Democratic president is, you know, destroying their livelihood. But he's got to go out here against a Republican president that is very popular with his base and say, this could be catastrophic. At one point he said, quote, I hope he knows what he's doing. It's making people nervous.
Actually, I want to show you his statement. This is when he was speaking to Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business, when they're finally talking about something related to the economy. That's kind of good. So take a look at that.
Sir, you are from Iowa and you are representing farmers. What's your take on this? Are you concerned about the impact of these tariffs?
And my son, Robin, operates our family farm. We're corn and soybeans. So, yes, every farmer, including every senator that represents those farmers, and that's in several states, particularly in the Midwest, is very, very nervous. Farmers basically are free traders. There isn't a single farmer that wouldn't be supporting the president to get a better level playing field with countries that have high tariffs. So we would appreciate his doing that. But the uncertainty of it and the drop in prices is if it continues, going to be catastrophic.
Yeah.
And that worries us.
So does he know what he's doing in the long term? Now, the reason Grassley's on TV yelling and screaming about this is because he knows, of course, Trump doesn't know what he's doing in the long term. He said in the earlier clip, you know, if he goes to the brink, fine, that might help. But if he goes over the brink, it'd be really bad. Why? Because he knows Trump's an idiot and could easily go over the brink. So that's him going all over Fox, you know, whether it's Fox News or Fox Business, going, be careful, be careful. Mr. Bull, it's a China shop, and you're about to break all to China. And Trump's like, I got this, I got this. It won't work out right away, but later you're going to thank me. And that's why Grassley's like, oh, God, oh, no. And now that I know that his family's also in the corn and soybean farming business, now I see why he's extra panicked.
Right, exactly. All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we have more news, including some pretty devastating stories regarding parents getting reunited with their children.
Yeah, before, so by the way, I cried during reading one of those. Man, it is, some of the stuff is a gut punch. I wanted to give the credit that about the graphics. It turns out Torn NATO was a collab between the legendary Jen Roofer and our new intern, Adriana. So look at that. Okay, making a contribution. And that graphic brought to you by Carlos Godoy. So shout out to the whole team. All right, we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to this podcast. You're only halfway through, so hold, stay right here. Just want to remind you, if you want to get all five segments of the Young Turks commercial free, these are just two of them. Every day we do it. So go to tytnetwork.com/join, and you get the whole five segments, 2 hours, ad free. Do it now. All right, back on the Young Turks. We have breaking news for you in just a second, but let me read a couple of YouTube super chats. Those help the show. That's why I read them. Wesley Miller has decided to take me up on Uyghur will read anything in the YouTube super chat. He says, I'd like to run for president in 2020. See my videos. Okay, well, there you have it. Here comes Wesley Miller. Artificial Morphosman writes in, thank you, TYT, Cenk, and Anna, for calling out Trump for what he is, an idiot. CNN, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, and NPR, etc., act like he's a legit president and treat him and establishment Democrats with kid gloves and never investigate where their money comes from. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that. That's very nice of you. Last one, Real Sean Murphy writes in on Twitter. Hey, farmers, do you know what country is benefiting greatly from China imports of soybeans now that they are canceling U.S. shipments? The answer is Russia. But don't worry, Trump is looking out for you. Excellent point. Okay, by the way, now you guys know we're home of progressives. And a great way to check out more of that is to check out our podcasting network. So tyt.com/audio, and you get all of our podcasts, Jimmy Dore, Anna's No Filter, Nina Turner's We the People, and the list goes on. Please check those out. I think you'll love them. Okay, Casper, breaking news.
All right. So Donald Trump's Supreme Court pick, Brett Kavanaugh, is now, of course, being looked into. Reporters are looking over his financial filings, which, of course, he's had to do as a judge. And they have found that his financial situation is very different from previous Supreme Court justice nominations. And most of that has to do with the debt that he's incurred for purposes like sporting events and the fact that when it comes to his assets, based on what he has disclosed, he doesn't appear to be as wealthy as other judges have in the past. So this is just information that I found interesting. I wanted to share with you guys. Now, this information is also verified by Raj Shah, who is a press secretary for Donald Trump. And he has given some explanations in regard to the debt that he had incurred. So the Supreme Court nominee incurred tens of thousands of dollars in debt, credit card debt specifically, for baseball tickets over the past decade, and at times reported liabilities that could have exceeded the value of his cash accounts and investment assets. Okay, so Kavanaugh's most recent financial disclosure forms reveal assets between $15,000 and $65,000. That's not a lot. I mean, it's a lot for the average person, but it's not a lot for someone who's worked as a federal judge, right?
Yeah, that's a tiny amount for a federal judge to have. And there's two weird things about this story, but let's give you all the details and then I'll tell you what I think is weird.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit more about the debt. And you're going to notice that there's a lot of disparity between the amounts that it could be. And it's because these financial disclosure forms, you know, don't require you to give you exact amounts. They give you ranges. So in 2016, Kavanaugh reported having between $60,000 and $200,000 in debt occurred over three credit cards and a personal loan. Each credit card held between $15,000 to $50,000 in debt and a thrift savings plan loan between $15,000 and $50,000. Now, we know that some of that debt was used for home improvement purposes, but we don't know exactly how much of that amount. Now, the credit card debts were paid off in 2017, according to the filings, which do not require details on the nature of the source of the payments. Also, he lists just two kinds of assets, unspecified accounts held with Bank of America and his wife's retirement fund from employment in Texas, and it totals between $15,000 and the $65,000.
Yeah, so, all right, let's get into a couple of weird parts. He just paid it off, so is that why he's down to 15 to 65? Did he? You know, if it was up to 200, did he have 265 and he just paid off? Where did he get all that money to pay off the credit card debt? That's the smallest part of the story. Maybe he just had accumulated it and paid it back. It could be totally normal. All right, it's weird that they're voluntarily reporting this. I know that they have to have it out anyway, so maybe they're just getting out ahead of the story. And maybe that's, and when you get out ahead of a story, you want to emphasize the thing that's most positive to you. So they are emphasizing, look at how little money he has. You see how he's an average guy. Now, he's not an average guy. His family was well established in Washington, D.C., went to one of the best private schools in Washington, D.C., went to Yale, Yale Law School. And nothing wrong with that, but he's not a regular schmo, and he worked for Republican politicians for a long time. And so he is deeply he's deeply pro-establishment. In fact, a Fox News on-air personality called him out for that and said he is the swamp, he is the establishment. So don't get tricked into like, oh, poor guy coming from a middle class background, etc.
No, I mean, he was already working in law when Bill Clinton was facing impeachment. He was working with Ken Starr at the time.
Yeah, so but the weirdest part of the story is how much money he spent on baseball tickets. That's super weird. I mean, you're going to accrue tens of thousands of dollars in debt because of you like to really like to go to baseball games and take your friends to baseball games. I smell something fishy there. So I like my friends. Yeah. I'm not going to rack up $17,000 in debt taking guys to the ball game. That's insanity. Or $37,000 or $57,000. The only way that you rack up that kind of debt taking people to the ball game is if it has some business implications.
Right.
So I'd like to see who his so-called friends are that he took to those baseball games.
And he paid off his debt. I mean, everything was paid off by 2017. And remember, we've reported on how, you know, the retiring Supreme Court justice has had lengthy ties with Donald Trump and his family. I mean, I'm sure that these types of conversations regarding who would replace him took place last year. And so I don't know. Look, this is speculation on my part, so I want to be fair and honest about that. But these numbers do seem weird, especially considering how long he's been a judge, and when you compare that to how much other judges had, you know, in assets by the time that they were nominated as Supreme Court justices.
But I want you guys to understand, when we say something is speculation, we're trying to be clear that hey, look, we know the facts about the credit card debt, et cetera, and then here's our analysis of it. But that analysis is from a lot of experience in covering politics. So the White House does not, in any White House, does not volunteer bad information about a Supreme Court nominee because they just wanted to be honest with the American people. They're like, oh, by the way, you're probably not going to catch this, but let me tell you some damaging information. No, that means likely there was a more significant story that was about to come out about that issue,
right? Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's normally how politics works. So we're going to get out ahead of the story, right? So I don't know if there's more damaging stuff coming, but I know that spending tens of thousands of dollars for baseball tickets for your so-called friends is not normal. This guy is a political operative his whole life before becoming a judge. Worked with Karl Rove, worked on with Jeb Bush, George Bush, and the list, Ken Starr, and the list goes on. And political operatives take people to the ball game for political reasons and business reasons. It's not like he's just taking the guys out to the game nonstop. So just understand that that spin is likely to be enormous nonsense. And I'd like to know what the reality of who he took to the games and why.
Right, I'm sure we're gonna find out. All right, moving on to some other news, and we will come back to Kavanaugh later and show you which conservative is not happy with him being chosen as the pick. All right, moving on. Migrant families are now being reunited thanks to two federal judges that demanded that Trump do so and stop this zero tolerance policy of prosecuting everyone who tries to seek asylum while simultaneously separating them from their children. Now, we're hearing some pretty devastating stories about what it's like to be reunited with children, especially extremely young kids who unfortunately don't recognize their parents anymore, because they've been separated for such a long period of time. So just to give you some examples, this is according to reporting from the New York Times. When the reunions finally happened on Tuesday of this week in Phoenix, the mothers were met with cries of rejection from their children. One mother said, "My three-year-old son didn't recognize me. My joy turned temporarily to sadness." So he was pushing back and saying that he wanted, "I want Miss, I want Miss," the child cried.
And that's referring to the social worker who had been taking care of him. So when I was looking at this story, look, I look for bias too, even in the case of, you know, against Trump or conservatives. And I'm a parent, so I thought, if the kid's above the age of five, you're not gonna forget his parents, right? Under the age of five, that easily could happen. So I thought that before I read the details. So then you read the details, and in both cases, it was a three-year-old. And that easily could happen. The second three-year-old story is even more devastating. Mm-hmm. But the first three-year-old story, this one, they're four months is an eternity for a three-year-old, right? And this happens sometimes with parents who die. The kids never remember the parents. And it is heartbreaking. But you take a three-year-old away for 4 months, he's not gonna remember. It's possible that he's not gonna remember his mom. Jesus Christ. And now you gotta restart a relationship. And the mom knows the kid, but the kid doesn't know the mom. Oh, what have we done? That's why this is monstrous.
Yeah, it really is. So let's talk about the second case that was outlined by the New York Times, and I made a mistake. I said that the first child said, "I want Miss, I want Miss." That was actually this child that I'm about to talk about right now. So Milka Pablo's three-year-old daughter, Darlie, screamed and tried to wiggle free from her mother's embrace. And as she was doing that, she kept saying, "I want Miss, I want Miss." And Miss refers to the social worker that was apparently working with this child while she was in one of these detention centers for children. And they think that, you know, oftentimes what happens is they think the children that they were detained with are their siblings, and they keep asking for their siblings. But of course, they're not the siblings, and it's just a devastating situation.
That's why you don't take kids under five away from their parents. It's crazy. But you know what? Actually, the worst story is the last one. So some of the parents were allowed to explain to the kids that they're going to be separated and they'll see them again. Some of the parents were not allowed to do that. So in one case, a father was separated from his three-year-old, never got to tell him why. All of a sudden, boom, the kid's gone. Now, that's terrorizing to the dad, but for the kid, it's way worse. And in detention, the kid stopped talking. He clammed up and he wouldn't talk. When they brought the kid back and finally united him with his dad, he wouldn't leave his dad's arms. No matter what they did, he wouldn't leave his dad's arms. So that's the story of where he did recognize his dad, but they still haven't gotten him to talk yet. And he wouldn't even take toys. He just wouldn't leave his dad. My God, what have we done? And right now, there are still dozens of parents they have not been able to locate to match the kids. And some of them might have already been deported. These fools, I mean, in almost every instance, when you're separated from anything, when you're separated from your baby at a hospital when they're first born, you have the tags to make sure that you don't lose the baby and the parent. One of our listeners made a good point. He said, when you go into prison, they actually take your wallet, your watch, etc., and they make sure to tag it. They didn't make sure to
have a
system in place.
They don't care. They don't care. Look, for all the criticism that people on the left get for being bleeding hearts and focusing too much on empathy and compassion, I mean, some on the right, not all, because there were Republicans who criticized this. There were conservatives who criticized this. But extreme right wingers that are supportive of this whole zero tolerance policy, I mean, no humanity, right? Don't have no humanity. Don't care about what will happen to these kids, to these parents. Like, just think about, just for one second, put yourself in the shoes of a mother or a father who gets their three-year-old taken away from them. I mean, they come to the border. I get it. Maybe you totally disagree with the immigration. Maybe you don't want them here. All right, fine. We disagree on that. But can we at least agree that it's incredibly cruel to separate these kids, these small children, from their parents?
No, and apparently we can't. I mean, we showed you the videos from the Trump rallies where they're like, oh, they're still crying about it. And of course, Lewandowski, former campaign manager for Trump, on TV said womp womp about a 10-year-old with Down syndrome separated from their mom. Out of the 102 kids that were under the age of 5, only a third of them have been returned by the deadline. They say they're efforting another third or so. And like I said, there's a couple of dozen that they're like, I don't know. We have the kids, but we don't know where their parents are. And the judge is asking them, you're in court here. I gave you a deadline for returning the kids. Where are the kids? Where are the parents? And the Justice Department goes, well, for some of them, we have no idea.
There's one other story that I want to get to before we go to break related to this. The Department of Justice has had to admit to a federal judge and also to the ACLU that in some cases they may have separated children from US citizens and also detained these US citizens for up to a year. These were mistakes made during Trump's enforcement of his so-called zero tolerance policy. So the Department of Justice told a federal judge that it may have mistakenly separated a father and toddler who could both be US citizens for as long as a year. The individual representing the ACLU in this case said the following: the fact that a citizen got caught up in this mess shows just how poor the government's record keeping was. And this is just the latest example. So Trump is known for using policies or implementing policies that have not been well thought out. He does it all the time. I mean, the first example of that during his presidency was his ban on transgender individuals in the military. He didn't talk to the Justice Department about it. He didn't talk to the Department of Defense about it. He just tweeted about it out of nowhere. And it was a mess from the beginning. And now it's extended. That ideology is extended to other policies, including the zero tolerance policy.
It's so often he announces policies without checking with his chief of staff or his secretary of defense, let alone our allies. That's because he is a child, he's temperamental, he doesn't know or care to know how any process works because he's not very bright, so he doesn't realize, hey, actions have consequences. And he lacks all empathy. So he's like, those consequences are not for me, they're for you. So if you're separated from your kid and it turns out you are a US citizen, yeah, but you're not me. I don't care. What do I care about? I care about looking tough. And so in this case, it's a US citizen. So maybe they were a little embarrassed. They shouldn't have done that. No, for Trump, does it really that matter that much with his base? He's like, look, they were brown. Now, he didn't say that. But do you see his base up in arms? Like, what are you doing to US citizens? We're all created equal. I don't really see that. Do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, the argument that you hear time and time again from people who support the zero tolerance policy is that liberals prioritize undocumented immigrants over Americans, which is not true. Actually, conservatives don't seem to care too much about American citizens either. They just use them and exploit them as convenient props when they're making these immigration arguments. But with that said, I mean, you have US citizens caught up in this mess. We don't even know if that person is Latino or brown. We don't know anything about him right now. He's not identified. But regardless, US citizens are getting caught up in this mess because it's not well thought out. It is inhumane, and it wasn't planned at all, properly at all. So if you genuinely do care about anyone's life, specifically Americans' lives, you should be concerned about the incompetence of the Trump administration when they're implementing these policies.
Well, all right, but finally, I'll give you a small guarantee and a big guarantee. The small guarantee is whoever that immigrant, that US citizen is that got locked up as an undocumented immigrant when they weren't and had their kids taken from them, they're not white. Okay, ICE is not going to white communities in the middle of the country and going, all right, let's grab a bunch of white people and figure out later if they're immigrants or not immigrants. Right. But they are going into random Latino communities in the middle of New York City. How is that close to the Mexican border? Like, technically, we're within 100 miles of the Canadian border. Ha ha, got you. I'll go terrorize Latino communities in the middle of New York City, in the middle of LA, et cetera. And let's snatch up some Latinos and see what happens.
Yeah.
Right? So now the big guarantee is whoever it is, they have no money.
Right, yes, you're right.
And so rich people do not accidentally get detained for a year. That never happens, okay? But if you're poor in this country, God help you. Because if they grab you by mistake and they rip you from your family, since you got no resources and the government's a giant bureaucracy, it's gonna roll over you. And what happens when you go to any detention center? Whether it's prison or something that's a little different than that. Hey, but I'm a citizen. Yeah, sure you are. Shut up, right? Because people who are in detention have no rights, okay? And we've been taught, oh no, you just treat them like animals. So I don't, depends probably a little bit on what your race is, but apparently this could happen to anybody in America. And if you don't have the money to be able to fight back, God knows how long you stay in detention, and God knows how long you're ripped away from your family.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I will tell you exactly how ICE is monitoring everyone, not just potential undocumented immigrants, but every single person living in the United States.
We'll yeah, it's right not back. An exaggeration, no. And you'll find out in what context they might grab your information and then what they might do with it. Thanks for watching what I hope was a lovely edition of the Young Turks. Now, you know that is two of the five segments that we do because that's free. We want to have you support independent media and come watch the whole show that we do every day. That's five segments overall, no ads at all. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Come become a member. Thanks for watching either way. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.